Dear friends, a very warm welcome to this special meeting, the ULT Day, to show our gratitude towards Mr. Robert Crosby. It is the 100th year of his passing. This year is the 100th year of his passing. So let's commence the meeting, and a note that we have restarted our Sunday programs from today onwards. In the morning we began with the Secret Doctrine study class, wherein we are considering the first volume of Secret Doctrine, Cosmogenesis. And we had taken a break from about the 6th or 7th of May till today for Sunday programs. And we have now resumed Sunday programs, and Saturday programs will continue as usual. So, as is the pattern that we follow in our special meetings, let's begin by dwelling upon three readings from the three teachers. Firstly, from the writings of Madam H.P. Blavatsky, followed by that of Mr. William Q. Church, and then that of Crosby. Then there will be a talk appropriate to the occasion. So let's consider the readings from the writings of Madam H.P.
and watchfulness may become fatal in every case. In every fellow serve the purpose of the brotherhood, the progress made would astonish the world and place the ark of the TS out of reach.
Thank you. Secondly, from the writings of Mr. W.Q. Judge.
It is natural for one to ask, what are the future and what are the defined object, if any, for our work? That can be answered in many ways. There is first our own work in and on ourselves, each one, that has for its object enlightenment of oneself for the good of others. If that is pursued selfishly, some enlightenment comes, but not the one needed for the whole world. We have to watch ourselves so as to make of each a center from which in a measure may flow out the potentialities for good that from the adept come in large and affluent streams. The future then for each will come from each present moment. As we use the moment, so we shift the future up or down for good or ill. The future being only a word for the present, not yet come. We have to see to the present more than all. If the present is full of doubt or vacillation, so will be the future. If full of confidence, calmness, hope, courage and intelligence, this also will be the future. As to the broader scope of the work that comes from united effort of the whole mass of humans, it embraces the race, and as we cannot escape from the destiny of the race, we have to dismiss doubt and continue to work. The race is, as a whole, in a transcendent state, and many of its units are kept back by the condition of the whole. We find the path difficult because, being of the race, the general race tendencies very strongly affect us. This we cannot do away within a moment. It is useless to groan over it. It is also selfish, since we in the distant past had a hand in making it what it is now. The only way we can alter it is by such action now as makes of each one the center for good, a force that makes for righteousness and that is guided by wisdom. For the great power of the general badness, we each one have a greater fight to wage. And the moment we force our inner nature up beyond the dead level of the world. So, before we attempt that forcing, we should on the lower plane accumulate all that we get of merit by unselfish acts, by kind thoughts, by detaching our minds from the allurements of the world. So, the masters have said, this is a transition age, and he who has ears to hear will hear what has thus been said. We are working for the new cycles and centuries. What we do now in this transition age will be like what the great Dhyan Chauhans did in the transition point. What we now do in faith and hope for others and for ourselves will result similarly on the plane to which it is all dead. Thus in other centuries, we will come out again and go on with it. If we neglect it now, so much the worse for us then. Hence, we are not working for some definite organization of the new years to come, but for a change in the manas and buddhi of the race.
Thank you. The last and the third reading is from the writings of Mr. Robert Crosby.
If we waited until we were saints, would we ever begin? The Gita says, lay all thy deeds, good and bad alike, upon me. We have to give ourselves as we are, not as we would like to be, or we could never become as masters are. The fact that some of our deeds are recognized as bad means their relinquishment sooner or later. This must be so if we are striving to be true to them. So, by doing all we can to make the way sure and clear according to our lives, we may step forward with strength and boldness, because the path is theirs as well as ours. At times we may doubt, but this arises from personal uncertainty, the fear of one or other consequence. We should take it that whatever comes in a necessary position is a necessary position for us to be in order to do further and better work for them. And we are helped, and in the right way, the way our nature needs, not necessarily according to what we assume to be the proper way. Ingratitude is not one of our vices. They have said this, and it is lived up. We may be sure the very best that can be done for us is done and being done all the time. We have to find a way to them through service. Criticisms by others may or may not be well taken. We have to judge by results obtained, rather than by anyone's opinion, and follow those methods which bring desirable results. There is a psychic wave at the present, and it will require much effort to maintain any movement in the new direction. So far as we are concerned, this will cause the output of energy which increases strength. If it were not for such obstacles and opportunities, we might fall into mere realize upon our present acquirements and results achieved, and so go no further. We have to think at all times of others and of the future. If others are not helped and trained to take hold, to share in the work and its responsibilities, then should anything happen to us, the work would suffer. In endeavoring to aid them, it is essential to encourage their own initiative as much as possible, suggesting and adjusting when and where necessary.
Thank you very much. Now, as already mentioned, this is the 100th year anniversary of Mr. Robert Crosby's death. So, though we observe ULT Day every year around on or before 25th of June, this is a very special occasion. This year is a very special occasion. It is said that the lamp by which we can read the spirit of the master's writing is gratitude. Gratitude is a lamp which will shed that kind of light which will help us to understand the spirit of the teacher's writing. Without gratitude, we will be only reading the letter. The spirit we will entirely miss. So this is an occasion to express our deep indebtedness and gratitude towards Mr. Robert Crosby, but for whom the whole Theosophical movement, which was modern Theosophical movement launched in 1875, was derailed within a matter of 25-30 years. So it was he who resuscitated the movement. In fact, it was he who held strong when everything around him was in a state of flux. He had his mind, heart, and his soul at that center, which is undisturbed when there is a storm which is going on. He held to what is true, what is essential, and let go of what is untrue and non-essential. And at the right time, he made the outward effort in terms of establishing the United Lodge of Theosophists in Los Angeles, and gave a outer expression to that undercurrent of spiritual movement. So there are many who have written about the Theosophical Society and the impact that it has had upon politics of India, worldwide, what impact it had, and so on. But without a clear understanding of Theosophy itself, or rather without a Theosophical insight into the events that took place then, all such scholarly works will be very, very, very scholarly, but it will lack the very essence, the very soul, the very insight into the Theosophical Society and the Theosophical Movement. It will be like the work of the Orientalists, who were great Sanskrit pundits, but who missed the very spirit of Upanishadic teachings and saw everything from their own unique color and pigeonhole perspective. So they interpreted the whole of the Upanishad and the Vedic corpus of literature from their own narrow standpoint. That is done in various by various schools of thought. There is a Marxist way of reading history. There is a economic-centered way of reading history, and so on and so forth. But we are more focused on the very soul, the root, and the kernel of human being, which is the spiritual entity itself. And from that standpoint, examine life, examine the events of life, and try to gather meaning from it. So, the more we understand man's essential nature and why we are here for the human evolution and the goal that we have for future, the more we find the importance of Theosophy and the role that United Lodge of Theosophists has to play in that grand movement of nature, in that grand activity of nature, of evolution of the soul. That's where we will have to, that's how we will have to understand Theosophy and ULT. If you ask the question, what is ULT, and we consider it during our study classes when we read declaration and so on, various ideas come forward. Like, it is said that it's a school for learning Theosophy. It is said that it is a clear indication of the lines of work that a serious student has to undertake, and it is a statement of the purpose for which we have all united here, or it is an opportunity to obtain divine wisdom. Various of these discussions have come up during, various of these points have come up while we discussed the declaration in our study classes, right? But today what we'll do is we'll consider ULT in its three aspects, because you know, you remember in our study classes we read that man has three aspects, universe also has three aspects, so we can consider ULT also in its threefold aspects. The first is the physical aspect of ULT. We receive calls from passerbys who walk across the main road, and we receive calls saying that, sir, we have come from such and such a place, Mysore or Gundlapet or whatever, and then we want a boarding and a lodging place. So, is it available, sir, on such and such a day, we need to book the room. So, because there is a lodge mentioned there, most people think that there is a lodging in the boarding facility. The word lodge itself, if you trace it, you can trace it to two etymological roots. One is what is called as logos. Logos. Logos is expression. Word. Expression. What is hidden as a thought is expressed through the word, the logos. That's one meaning from which lodge is derived. Another meaning is, it goes to some 16th century Germanic root, if I remember right, which comes from the word which means it's a workshop. Lodge used to be a workshop. That's why masonry also had a Masonic lodge. That is, there's a workshop going on. So in the theosophical sense, ULT is a workshop in that sense. A workshop which is not again on the physical plane, but a workshop within our heart. A workshop where there is an alchemical process taking place, in the case of a serious student, of transforming one's own lower base element into the nobler element, which is coal. So in that sense, ULT is a workshop. It's a lodge, it's a workshop. ULT is not this building. We have discussed it so many times. If not this building, we'll go somewhere else. It's as long as there are few devoted people in whose heart there is aspiration for the welfare of humanity and the discipline to apprehend the philosophy that the teachers have given us and the commitment to follow the work according to the lines that they have traced out, there is ULT. Why a group of students, even if there is one person in the remotest corner of the world, unknown to anybody, doing this work earnestly, he is far more visible and he or she is more a greater benefactor of the world than a supposed ULT where many people have gathered but where the focus is not theosophy. That's why in Gospel according to St. Matthew, right, 18th chapter, what does it say? Noted it down, let me read it. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. So where that aspiration and the devotion is there, there is ULT. And the contrary of having swelled up numbers but lost focus, then there is no ULT. There is no theosophy also. And this matches perfectly with the corollary of man. You know, man has his physical body, which is supposed to be a mere instrument for the experience of the soul. And through that experience, or rather that experience leading to emancipation, right? But if the body becomes the focus, body becomes the center of your life, then where is the question of fulfilling the soul's purpose? So the divine ego has sent a worker in this world working through the body. The lower mind is like a worker. And the worker has forgotten about his job, his work here, and he has gone on his own trip. That's why Shankara says in the Viveka Chudamani that clinging on to body and expecting liberation is like one who clings on to a crocodile, or one who sits on top of a crocodile thinking it is a log of wood and hoping that it will help you cross the river. What will the crocodile do? It will pull you into the water, eat you up. That's what body also will do. That's what organizations also will do. That's what even organized religions also do. So ULT was a great it's like a breath of fresh air, if you look at it, in the noxious sphere of where everything is organization centric, everything is personality centric, everything is based on a cult, everything is based on a person or a supposed institution. The spirit of ULT is to liberate the human mind from any of these trappings and then put him on the right path towards self-knowledge, self-discovery and self-responsibility. That's what ULT does. So that is considering ULT on the physical plane. It's not a building. If not here, somewhere else the students will gather. If nowhere, one student is enough. What matters is the intensity of one's aspiration and devotion. Next, we can consider ULT on the mental and the moral plane. On the mental and moral plane, it is a, or rather in the present situation, it is the best place to learn theosophy pure and simple without adulteration, without anybody injecting their version of theosophy, their interpretation of theosophy, or their supposed scholarly commentary on theosophy. If somebody wants to know what theosophy says, pure and simple, unadulterated, the recorded message of the masters. Probably ULT is the only place where that is possible. The vehicle which was founded for this same purpose went astray for historical reasons. We all know the human defects are such that the very society which was founded to as a body to express the theosophical spirit was hijacked by the very enemies of the theosophical spirit, and that has happened all through history. So if you want unadulterated theosophy, you will use the place. Next is, you will not find any leaders here, any teachers here. Just because a person is sitting on the chair or is taking the chair during the study classes does not make the person a teacher. And nobody is foolish enough, no true student is foolish enough to think that he is a teacher. We are not teachers here. Nobody should follow us. Nobody should imitate us. We are not the exemplars. We consider that we are all students of theosophy with as much weakness as anybody else, and in most cases more weakness than the general population of the world. But we find that there is something important here that we have benefited from, that the same benefit needs to be extended to others, and the same spiritual insight, the same genuine doctrines of the great rishis, the great mahatmas, should be available to others. So in our own imperfect way, we try to keep this alive. So that is another aspect of the mental and the moral aspect of ULT. In this sense, you must really appreciate what the Sikh gurus did in many centuries ago. After the lineage of 10 gurus, what did they say? They said that there is nobody fit enough to occupy the great office of a guru. So all the combined teaching of the 10 gurus, we have compiled it, and this is the teacher. So the Granth Sahib is the guru, Guru Granth Sahib, and the teachings are to be followed, not any person. Of course, now if you look at it, there are caste system and lot of other problems in the Sikh community also, naturally, because it's all about human weaknesses. So that's why HBB says that unless you assimilate me, there is no hope for you. What she means is that the guru is the teaching. The teaching is the guru. You cannot separate those two. If you want to understand the masters, the messengers, then you understand the message that they have written. To the extent that we have studied and understood HPB and Chaj, to that extent we can call ourselves as genuine students of theosophy. Otherwise, we are merely enquirers, merely interested candidates, that's all. But a serious student will make that effort to apprehend first all that the teachers have said and make it into a part of his mental furniture. So there is no personality cult. We all keep ourselves in the background. So impersonality. So unadulterated theosophy and impersonality. Those two unique things that you find in ULT. So who is a theosophist? HPB gives an excellent answer in her article, What is a Theosophist? She says, be what he may, that is whether a theist, a pantheist, or an atheist, be what he may, once that a student abandons the old and trodden highway of routine and enters upon the solitary path of independent thought, Godward, he is a theosophist, an original thinker, a seeker after the eternal truth with an inspiration of his own to solve the universal problems. Look at the broad, cosmopolitan, universal definition of who a theosophist is. A real theosophist then need not belong to any society, he need not even have heard of theosophy. He in some rural corner or in the busyness of the urban center, he may be a theosophist. So that is about the mental and the moral aspect of ULT that we may inquire into. The third and the most important is to do with the very core of our being, which is the spiritual aspect of ULT. Spiritual. The basic teaching is that we are all emanations of the same common universal divine principle. Every being, whether whatever be the outer condition, whether we may see him as a sage, we may see him as a sinner, a criminal, a terrorist, a corrupt politician, a good bureaucrat, whatever may be the outer situation, whatever religion that he or she may belong to, irrespective of all these outer encasements and notions, at the very essence of each one of us, there is divinity and goodness. And the whole purpose of our coming into existence and taking up bodies repeatedly as a part of the human evolution is to express more and more of what is divine in us. That step is twofold. One is, firstly, to subjugate our animal nature through the reason of our human mind. The human has to first control and subjugate and tame the animal within us. Then comes the second process of the human itself becoming ennobled and merging himself into the divine. At the very center, man is divine. And we are all here in this stream of evolution trying to assert that divinity within us. The difficulty is our lower nature. That's one aspect of our obligation towards our higher nature. The other is, there are innumerable beings around us, and there is a very mysterious, deep and a profound obligation. The lines of obligation that arises from our heart runs in myriads of directions and connects us with innumerable beings, various hierarchies. And that obligation must be fulfilled. So we are born here in debt, and that obligation must be understood, and in the right way it must be discharging of our duties and obligation. Without that, the whole human life is a big drama which leads to more and more trouble and more and more waste. It's a waste. So what theosophy does is to present to the human mind the very essential nature of ours. What we are in our true essence and in our various aspects, and the deep interrelationship between these aspects and the universe. And like we were discussing in the morning study class, when there was study of secret doctrine. So there is the cosmos and the man. So there is the first volume, cosmogenesis, second volume, anthropogenesis. Once you study the common laws and see the great elements of cosmos, then you study the particular laws which are expression of those, and the particular elements of derived from those grand elements, cosmic elements, and see that man is a copy of the universe. So tat padartha and tvam padartha, as we were discussing. And it's only this complete comprehensive knowledge of the esoteric philosophy that gives us the conviction that tattvamasi, that you are that. Without that, mere repetition is mere dogmatic assertion, that's all. So theosophy and United Lodge of Theosophists, which is an integral part of the journey of the soul, is here to aid that spiritual unfoldment. Man being a complicated being, he has his physical aspect, he has his mental aspect, he has his psychic aspect, his desire aspect, and he has his moral followed by the spiritual. You know, all these things are dynamically working in us. And the things that we see in the society outwardly is the expression of all these various forces in us working in different combinations. So what theosophy is here to show is what is the most essential true part of our nature, and how do we bring about true happiness, peace and harmony in the whole on the earth. How do we do that? So aiding that human evolution, grand evolution of nature, that is a spiritual, that in the spiritual sense is the ULT's work, bring about that brotherhood of humanity. Therefore all teachers speak about knowledge, right? You take Buddha, he says that it begins with samyak drishti. Jain philosophy has the triad of samyak darshana, samyak jnana and samyak charitra. It is the right perspective, the right knowledge, followed by right action. So and Shankara always keeps saying about the importance of dana. So ULT is here to present that knowledge of soul's higher nature and higher functions of man. That is the work of, and aid this evolutionary progress. That is ULT in its three broad aspects. Now, for the general enquirer, what do we say ULT is about? You don't get any fame here. You don't find any. There is no membership. There is no power. There is no position that you can have here. And there is no organization at all. So where is the question of having a hierarchy and becoming a president of ULT and so on? It's all meaningless. So what attracts an enquirer into ULT is predominantly that there is a band of people who are genuinely interested in theosophy with a no-nonsense approach. Right? There is no scope for non-essentials here. Who pays the bill, who does this, who takes care of all these things, all non-essentials. And why are we here? We are here primarily to study and promulgate and exemplify and help each other in the practice of theosophical life. So there is a certain simplicity, there is a certain genuineness, and we are not here for our own sake. A student of theosophy does not study theosophy for his own sake. An enquirer will do that because you have burning questions and you have enquired into various avenues of intellectual enquiry and you have not found the answer anywhere. So you are enquiring into ULT, I mean into theosophy through ULT. Because if you try to enquire into quote-unquote theosophy through any of the other means, Theosophical Society and other society, at best what you will find is garbled things, you know, because people have mixed up theosophy with their own scholarly understanding and things like that. So in ULT that is not the case. You find genuine theosophy. And one who studies theosophy will find that what is mentioned in theosophy is, yes, it is there. You may find portions of it in Veda, portions of it in Zoroastrian system, portions of it in Jewish Kabbalah, in the Chinese system. So like a bee, an interested student will become like a honey bee. For a phase of his life, he'll be deeply interested in Platonic philosophy. He'll consume Platonic philosophy deeply. And then that phase ends and then he'll be interested in studying Kabbalah. But irrespective of all these studies, there will be an underlying thread which connects all these things. And that is what he appreciates. He will not appreciate Plato like Benjamin Jowett Dunn, who was a great scholar, but who missed the spirit of the Platonic philosophy. He is not a scholar like that, a student of theosophy. But he grasped the very spirit of the Platonic system because he is studying the underlying essence which is there, which gives rise to all philosophical and religious system. So once HPB responded to the question, what is your creed and what is your ritual in the Theosophical Society? She said that our creed is loyalty to truth. That's why in the logo it is written Satyat Nasti Paro Dharma. There is no religion greater than truth. So A true student of theosophy is a student of truth, irrespective of where it comes from, what system, what notions have been labeled upon them. So his loyalty is towards truth, and his ritual is to honor every truth by use, by practice. Unless these two things are done, nobody can call themselves, should have the audacity to call themselves as theosophist. So we are all merely students of theosophy, trying to understand and practice it in our own way. That is about ULT for a common inquirer. But for a deeper student of theosophy, ULT takes a different meaning altogether. The pledge, or rather the clause that he signs, he or she signs, all that takes a deeper meaning the more you study theosophy. So for a student of theosophy, he will find that the true power of theosophy is unlocked when he devotes himself to the good of others. Intellectual understanding is good, but if it stops there, then you have only scratched the very surface of theosophy. Theosophy will be deeply beneficial and become a living power in us only when we take the focus away from us and place it upon the others, that is, for the benefit of others, for the welfare of others, for the good of others. Then theosophy begins to really shine forth in us. So then we begin to benefit humanity. See, what theosophy says is, this is one way of, when we say philanthropic organization, so many people with a deep love and concern and care towards the suffering fellow men, they open so many centers and engage in so many avenues to help others, feeding the poor, clothing them, the animals, taking care of animals. There are so many such innumerable agencies which are philanthropic, which have the love of humanity in their heart. A student of theosophy will engage in every one of them individually, to the best of his ability, to whatever karmic opportunity has been placed in his hand, to the best of his ability, he leads his life engaging in philanthropy in all its aspects, physical, mental, moral, spiritual. But at ULT, the center and the focus when we come here is to work on the mental, moral and the spiritual. Individually we engage in various other philanthropies, but at ULT we focus on solving the cause which has given rise to innumerable effects of effects in our society, which we see in so many negative aspects of society, so much of suffering, exploitation, injustices. The root of all this is traced to the human heart, the wrong ideas that we hold. And Mr. Crosby gives a very good example in his letters, where he says that in India, it seems, there used to be a peculiar way of catching the monkeys. That is, you would have a jar full of nuts, but the mouth or the neck of the jar is very small. So what the monkey would do is, it would come look and it would find the nuts. It would put its hand down, grab the nuts. But because it has expanded its wrist, or rather its palm, because it's holding the nut, it cannot pull it out, and therefore they catch the monkeys then. That it seems that used to be a system of catching the monkeys. So Mr. Crosby gives this example and says that every human soul is caught, trapped in this manner through petty ideas. Petty ideas. Nuts are like these petty ideas. We have held on to them. We are not ready to let go of them. Therefore the soul is trapped, like a monkey is trapped. So, what theosophy does is to broaden our understanding, give a broader, expand our horizon. Then naturally, when your ideas begin to change. When you begin to replace deep-rooted ideas by broader ones, personal ideas with impersonal, personal with spiritual, and Vishti Bhava with Samashti Bhava. That can happen only through genuine study and understanding of the right philosophy of life. And when that begins, when that process begins, then there is a natural transformation that you find in terms of our taste, in terms of our behavior, in terms of our perspective, in terms of our engagement with others. So that's the alchemical workshop that is happening in our heart if we are true to our study. True to study, contemplation, exemplification, then that begins to take place. And this whole process of the workshop that is there, that is all happening. The motivation for all that is not that I may attain moksha or that I may attain merit. There are many who follow that path. You know, in India, the majority is shown that path. You know, moksha, 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 individual moksha, mukti, jivan mukti, that, this and other. But the true Upanishadic spirit is not that at all. It is mistook in India today. The true Upanishadic spirit is moksha for all, not for oneself. If necessary, and that will be necessary, renunciation of one's own hard-earned peace, bliss and rest of whatever stage, whether at our stage or at the highest, which is Nirvana itself. Renunciation of that and working for the welfare of others. For a serious student of theosophy, who is not merely an inquirer, one who takes it up seriously, this path opens up to him. He has to make a choice. He has to work for the good of others in this manner. That is, himself becoming a center through which, probably unknown to himself, unconsciously to himself, but definitely a center from which spiritual influences radiate on the inner plane. And those influences, because we are all connected with each other, those influences touch the people around us, touch the people whom we come in contact with, and on the inner plane instill upon them ideas, even unknown to ourselves, instill upon them ideas for good, for towards the true, towards the righteous, towards the true, good and the beautiful. Instill upon them those ideas through one's own self-transformation. So the cause or the motivation for self-transformation, which ULT and Theosophy shows, is not oneself at all, but so that the suffering, the great orphan humanity, as the masters call it, the great orphan humanity. You know, Swami Vivekananda's heart used to always beat for the poor, the downtrodden and the exploited, and the countrymen, the country which was in such glorious state, look at its present state. What must I do to revive that ancient culture? You know, like that, our heart must beat for the welfare of all sentient beings. That transformation naturally comes if you persist in the study of theosophy. So ULT takes up that angle, that angle of ULT opens up for a serious student of theosophy. And many people come and go. Some of us have seen over many years and decades, many inquirers come and go. Some of them remain for a few months and go. But there is always, we have heard that in other centers of ULT also, there is always a center, the hub. You know, the wheel keeps moving. There is movement, constant movement in the wheel. Up goes down, down comes up, and so on and so forth. But the hub of the wheel doesn't move. It remains constant, sturdy. Like Crosby, when so many things were changing in a flux in the 1890s and so on, he remained constant. He remained rooted in the eternal, to use a Upanishadic phrase, rooted in the eternal and let go of the non-eternal. Like that, in the ULT also we find that some people stick somehow, and based on their past soul experience, it flowers out and they stick, they somehow cleave onto theosophy. and they form the hub, they form the core which doesn't let go. So many people come and go, our own families laugh at us, saying, what is there? They don't understand. So it's all okay, no problem. So especially families, friends, they have a very, they just can't understand, and they always think there must be some ulterior motive in doing all this. There's some secret is there. There's some secret. Otherwise it cannot.
What is it that is attracting
you? There is no fame, then nobody is publishing your name. You bring out the program, nobody says that such and such a person is giving talk so that you can put it in Instagram and all. No such thing.
Something fishy is going on.
Something fishy. or this fellow has conked off, as in he's gone mad. So,
like all the others.
So, but as Plato says, divine madness is better than earthly sanity. Divine madness is better than earthly sanity. So some students who see the necessity of it, some students who see that there's nothing more noble that a person can undertake in his life than working for the welfare, the true welfare of humanity, true good of humanity, and establishing oneself on the path of what the true rishis have shown, the true hierophants have shown. And such a person, like we were discussing in the morning, he does not engage in the false sannyas. All the true Raja Yogis, Raja Rishis, warn against this false sannyas. Just because you come to your tea, then leave out wife and children and all that, and go to some ashram and all that. All that is the false sannyas. The karmic repercussions of it is very, very severe. So what Theosophy shows is the true inward renunciation while you are engaged in all the duties of life, and it gives you a sure focus. One friend was yesterday evening using this phrase, what is your North Pole? It gives you that North Pole. What?
North Star.
North Star. What is a North Star? That is our North Star. A North Star for navigation, right? North Star. In all the duties of our life, we will have that North Star clearly in focus, and all the energies that we generate in our daily activities and all the things that we do, everything will be done perfectly but geared towards that one single aim and goal. And as HPB says, we will work towards that stage where our heart beats, every beat of our heart is for the sake of the good of others. So that needs self-transformation. If we ourselves are sunk in ignorance, in delusions, what? For us to give money to others, we must have a bank balance. Right? Otherwise, what will we give money? How will we give wealth? Like that, even spiritually, we must have a balance. We must have acquired something for us to first give to others. So it is again a workshop where we undertake this study with a no-nonsense approach. There's no leader, there's nobody to follow. Even a great sage who came in the guise of HPB, she wrote, it is written there, follow the path that I show the masters who are behind, don't follow me or my path. And that is what the great teachers say. It's meaningless. It's a kind of a blasphemy for pretty ordinary students to think themselves as teachers and then dictate things and all that. So ULT is in that way founded on sure foundation of impersonality and absolute sovereignty of the soul. Nobody questions anybody. Nobody assigns things to anybody. Each person decides for himself what he does. All that ULT does is it offers an opportunity for genuine contact with esoteric philosophy. And a group of students who are at least as much sincere as anybody else in their study of these teachings. So that's what ULT does. So we'll stop here. There are some more things that we could say, but we'll have to stop here. We have a few more minutes time. And we'll end here by recollecting the responsibility that we have. Who gave the responsibility? We ourselves have taken the responsibility. Nobody else gave the responsibility. We ourselves take the responsibility. And having taken the responsibility, what are the consequences of not doing things in the right manner and in the right spirit and in the right way that it has to be done? In our study of theosophy, in our obligation, in our dharma towards the great teachers who have sacrificed so much to ensure that the teachings reach us. And after having reached in 1875, 1880, it was destroyed. But one person retained it and then ensured that everything came back again. Our obligation to the whole chain of people who have sacrificed so much so that we may benefit from it. Without any donation, without any membership fee, without asking any such thing. They didn't ask for any membership fee and money donation and all that. The great teachers don't do that. It's all given for free. So, responsibility that we have taken to keep this center alive. This center was started in 42. Generations of students have sacrificed for the sake of ensuring that the center runs so that inquirers like me, you and others can come in touch with theosophy. What they do with it, entirely up to them. That's none of our dharma. That's not a swadharma. Swadharma is to keep it alive. So that responsibility we have taken upon ourselves, and we need to be true to that. It is said that a link is as strong as its weakest. A chain is as strong as its weakest link. A chain is as strong as its weakest link. So we are all links. And after having come, benefited from this, a few of us at least are really convinced that it has to be kept alive. And it is that same self-sacrificial ideal which theosophy shows, which keeps the centers, various centers in various parts of the world alive. So self-sacrificial work for the good of humanity and bringing about a spiritual transformation in oneself, so that the transformation through the method of action and reaction upon everyone's nature may bring about a transformation in others also. That work we must engage in. Through study, through best of exemplification, dissemination. So with this we will stop here, and next Sunday on 30th of June we have at 6:15 p.m. the topic, the spirit of charity. So we are resuming all our three meetings.